I think Russell Moore has become the gold standard, don't you think, of male vocalist in bluegrass. There's a lot of great singers, but you know, Russell's IBMA Male Vocalist of the Year for 5 years. It's just an interesting thing that not having that typical, you know, what we think of as the high lonesome bluegrass voice, Russell Moore has definitely made a name with Third Time Out. Always, always great. Great projects from them, great concerts from them every year. Year in, year out, it's a top quality band. One of the ones you can always depend on, Russell Moore and Third Time Out. They've gone through some personnel changes. We'll talk about that. We'll talk to Russell about the last album, which is the Russell Moore and Third Time Out Timeless Hits from the Past Bluegrass. It's Russell Moore. How you doing?
Doing great, Steve. Doing wonderful. Having a great day, and I hope you are too.
We are. You know, it's always a great day when it's not below zero, but it's real gray and windy, and you're thinking, this is still pretty miserable too. I'm up in Kentucky, so it's still kind of like, yeah, this isn't exactly, but you know, it's winter time, so that's what we're doing. I'm having a great time on the radio though, and so thrilled you could be a part of it today. This is going to be exciting for me.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it myself as well. You know, since we talked and set up a good time here, but we're you know, as far as the weather down here, and I'm about 30 miles north of Georgia.
Okay,
Atlanta, Georgia. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And this morning, early this morning, about 2:30, it was rocking and rolling around here with thunder and lightning and high winds and rain. And right now, the sun is shining and it's warming up and it's just beautiful. So glad to see that, because here lately, trying to stay warm and trying to find some sunshine and some dryness has been a chore. So we've really been looking forward to weather like this.
Man, you know, if the sun is shining, it just kind of makes everything okay. Even if it is single digits, which you hate, but still the sun's shining, you think, you know, I can make this. I can do this.
Well, yeah. You know, that's one of the reasons I love living in the South is because of the warmer climates and all. And, you know, there were a lot of record-breaking temperature, low temperature set, you know, here just a few days ago.
Oh, yeah.
And we weren't immune to that either, because it was last Tuesday morning, I guess it was, about 6:45, it was 3 degrees outside my door. And I can't tell you the last time we saw single digits here in this area of Georgia. I mean, I've been here for 20-plus years, so that was a rude awakening right there.
Well, you know, we're all still, as I woke up this morning, and I happened to think, you know, little things to me, and this in all honesty, I woke up this morning and I, you know, Facebook, what it is, I just kind of, it's a way to get thoughts out of your head. I thought, you know, I have a roof over my head and it's a pretty good day.
Yeah.
And, you know, starting like that, it's, you know, there's a lot of people worse off. So we're doing pretty good, Russell, you and me.
I'm totally with you. You know, if you can wake up and greet the day, then it's already a good day.
Oh, yeah. You know, I started off the show, which kicked on at 2 o'clock, so about a half an hour ago, and I thought, how do I introduce Russell Moore? What can I say to really put this into perspective in Third Time Out? And I think I've come close to it in this way. Everybody knows you're a 5-time vocalist of the year for IBMA, and everybody knows that there's a very distinctive sound. And I think, Russell, what's happened in over the time that you've been with Third Time Out and all the other work that you've done, I think the voice of Russell Moore has sort of become the gold standard.
Well, I guess it's the most common denominator. I'm the only original band member left in the group, so where other things may have changed musically, maybe the style of banjo playing or the style of fiddle playing or bass playing, or the different tones in the vocals. I mean, mine is the constant throughout the 22 years or 23 years that we've been performing. But, you know, even having said that, you know, there's been some confirmation, I guess, or conformity, you know, because Wayne's been here for, what, 17, 18 years.
Yeah.
He's recorded. He's on more of the Third Time Out recordings than any other Manning player, for sure. There was a stint early on where Lou Reed was actually playing Manning in the group. We never did get a chance to record with that particular ensemble, but for, you know, right around a year, maybe a little less, he was a part of the group, and Alan Perdue spent a few years here, and about 3 years, I guess, and did a great job, too. And all these players, I mean, one thing that we've had through the years is just great players. We've always had, you know, great musicians within the band, and they all kind of feel the same way, I guess, about what their role should be. It's very, especially in the band, like in the banjo department, you know, when you got Terry Bochum, who was the first guy on the flagship recordings on Rebel Records. Even Steve Dilling loves North Carolina style, you know, Scruggs, sure. Jimmy Crow. And that's kind of what we've always kind of looked to when we're looking for new band members.
Well, we're going to talk about the new configuration here in a minute, but I also want to point out this, and as I mentioned that your vocal now, as I'm talking to Russell Moore, if you're just tuning in a third time out, your vocal style now, I believe, because of all these awards, has kind of become. Whereas when you were growing up, it might have been, probably you not growing up may not have been Bill Monroe, but you understand the sound now of what can be a recognizable, acceptable, and even sought after lead singer in a bluegrass, an established, powerful bluegrass band. Your vocal style itself and the sound of your vocals is kind of it's different than what you grew up listening to.
Yeah, it is definitely. Because when I first was introduced to bluegrass, it was my mom would get these mail order albums, you know, from like county sales and places like that through the mail, have them shipped to the house. And Osmond, I mean not the Osmond Brothers, but the Stanley Brothers and Reno Smiley and Flat Scruggs, Bill Monroe. I had the opportunity to listen to all these people and there's great things about their vocal styles. You know, but when I heard Bobby Osmond sing, that's when it clicked to me. It really just broadened the horizon of what quote unquote bluegrass could be vocally. And I was really drawn in by his vocals and of course, the Osmond Brothers material, their arrangements, everything was really unique, and I really started thinking about bluegrass a whole lot at that point. And of course, later in years, I would even listen to other musics, and you know, country music and rock and roll, and honestly, I think the one thing that really struck a chord as far as where I'm at now and what I've drawn from over the years is trying to have a really good tone at whatever range you're singing in, you know.
Right.
And also pronunciation. Charlie Waller was...
There you go. I knew that was coming. Go ahead.
You had to. I mean, really. He was the king daddy of tone and pronunciation and all the people that, you know, Ronnie Mills staff and, you know, in other musics, you know, the ones that I realize now that I really keyed in on were the ones that were offering that kind of stuff. They're really the good tones and the good pronunciation.
Well, with those goals in mind, though, you still have to find your own voice. You can't try to sing like, well, no human being can sing like Bobby Osmond. He's got a range that goes from, you know, starts wherever and goes wherever. But at some point you had to try to think, as much as you admire all those singers, you've got the Charlie Waller, you know, approach to pronunciation, the clarity of the tone, but how do you find what becomes this so recognizable sound of Russell Moore?
Honestly, Steve, that is not, I don't think that's anything really that I can take credit for. I think that's a God-given gift that I, you know, that I've had all my life, and just, I mean, as I grow older, I think my voice changes just a little bit tonally, but I think it's just there. Put it that way. I'm just blessed to be able to produce the tones that I do. I'm trying to take precautions about I have really bad allergies.
Yeah.
And, you know, anybody who's ever tried to sing, you know, when you're when your sinuses are plugged up and you can't breathe right, then your tone goes away. And so I really last a couple of years trying to work really hard at keeping the allergies at bay and new medications and all that stuff, and they seem to be working great. So I'm feeling real good about what I'm doing right now vocally. You know, but I really think that just trying to do the pronunciation thing, trying to really focus on that, the phrasing of, you know, how do you turn a line?
Right.
You know, sometimes that if, you know, that has been something that I've probably worked on, and I can actually say this is something that I've worked on and I have gotten better at. Is how to turn a line, how to phrase it, how long to hold this word instead of this one. Or do you reverse that and hold this one a very short time and this one longer, you know, throughout the melody there. Things like that, I guess, they become easier now. And, you know, I think that's maybe even distinctive between vocalists in any music, but it's the way they phrase as well as anything that lets you know, oh, that's who that is. Right?
Well, and I'll bet you this too, Russell, that if someone is out there now and there's a new band and maybe there's a local group that wants to, you know, starting to make their way on the local stages and local venues, and they happen to do a third time out song with a Russell Moore vocal, I'll bet you that for the longest while, the only way they can hear those phrases turned is your way of doing it. And if they're probably going to mm-hmm. say the words and say the syllables the way you do because you put such an imprint on them.
Probably so, because I'm guilty of the same thing.
Well, sure.
You know, if we're doing Salty Dog Blues, you know, I've listened to it so many times by Flat Scruggs.
Yep.
I start getting this little drawl, you know, with the big L. Let me be, you know, and Steve used to always get a kick out of that. He'd say, man, you don't sound like you. That's hard. It's hard not to, you know, sing what you remember.
Right.
You know, listening to over and over, it's so embedded, you know, in your brain, and it's hard not to. But I'd say you're spot on, and I hope that is something that you know, people even years from now can even maybe hear a little bit in some of these songs that we're noted for. When somebody else is playing them, you know, getting the same inflections.
Oh, I think there's no question about it. I mean, the sound of Third Time Out and with your vocals and all the other people that you've mentioned that contribute to it, certainly, but it's so recognizable. We were talking off the air about John and Mary, and that must be such a fun song for you to perform live. I know people love it, and I was right before you came on, I played the version from Timeless Hits from the Past Bluegrass, which has Pam Tillis with it. But that's one of those tunes that everything about that, the drive in there, the pace, the tempo, just that beat that we were talking about, Wayne Benson, you know, cranking up the that rhythm that's like a metronome throughout the entire song, kicks it off, and then you just you just keep going and going. And Third Time Out has such a unique sound, I think, that people will instantly recognize when that music starts up. Not just that song, but so many of the things that you put your input on.
Yeah, that's what a band is all about, I guess, putting your imprint on it, your thumbprint on it. Being creative. And, you know, we were talking about the intros to the songs. You know, whenever Wayne starts playing the mandola with that John and Mary riff, you know, of course, everybody knows exactly right then what the song is we're performing.
Right.
And as far as that particular song, it does. It's got a different feel with a halftime mm-hmm. beat to it. And, then you've got the storyline, which is, you know, a positive storyline, not all about death and you know, floods or, you know, catastrophes of any kind, which bluegrass is known for just a little bit, you know.
A little bit, yeah.
But it's just a really catchy melody that Wayne came up with there. And that's, that along with the arrangement and all and the storyline, you know, has made it one of our biggest songs that we've ever recorded. And then you can go back to some other recordings. Well, the first number one song we had in bluegrass music was the Carl Jackson tune, Erase the Miles.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tuned that big E string down, you know, to an open D tuning, and put that capo on the third fret, when I go into that riff, instantly everybody knows.
Everybody knows it.
You know, what song it is. And that's all about putting your thumbprint on that. And, right. And you know, through the years, you know, every artist that I've ever listened to has got that thumbprint, you know, what they did to make it a little bit unique to them.
And that's always been the goal. And first of all, you got to be good top to bottom. You got to have the vocals. You got to have the arrangements. You got to have the players. And you got to have the presence on stage. But then you have to have something unique, or you're just going to be like any number of nameless, you know, bands that show up and do bluegrass. So that's got to be the goal.
It's got to be. And it keeps us, you know, fresh as you know, as artists,
mm-hmm.
right, working together. It keeps our minds, you know, clicking. You know, what can we do to make this our own?
Well, let me ask you this. So when you have a new project, and I want to talk about the timeless hits from the past bluegrass, because it's mm-hmm. just such a cool album. So when you get a new song into the band, you know, it could be an original, it could be something you've heard before. Mm-hmm. How do you go about making it sound like Russell Moore in Third Time Out? Is there an actual process that you think this should sound more like this, or it's just the way you approach it? Those things always amaze me, because I don't understand how you go about molding something into your sound.
You know, it could be with us, it's there's always input from whoever's got an idea. Doesn't mean that it's going to be implemented, you know, but it's great to have a lot of people throwing ideas into the hat.
Mm-hmm.
That is inherent to making a song, you know, kind of your own, giving it to that thumbprint. But there's no rhyme or reason to how we go about doing that. I can tell you some examples,
mm-hmm.
like Hard Rock Mountain Prison Till I Die, which was off our first Real Rhythm Records recording. Went to number one for us. It's a great song. When I first heard the demo, though, it was probably in the key of G, maybe. And Bradley Walker actually sang the demo, the lead on the demo.
Really?
And, you know, Bradley's voice is...
so
very
deep.
Low.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got more of a baritone lead vocal.
Oh yeah.
You know, so I was listening to the song, and it was a slower tempo than what we actually recorded it. You know, but listening, I just listened to the lyrics and to the chord progression, and I thought, you know what, this could be a really cool set opener. You know, this is a really good bluegrass style B chord. Put it up in B chord, do a high lead vocal on it instead of the lower vocal with the tenor and maybe high baritone. Change that up and make it a high lead with two parts under. Increase the tempo on the song so it's got more of that bluegrass, you know, crack,
mm-hmm.
I guess you say.
Yeah, sure.
And when I played it for the rest of the guys, and back whenever that was, and you know, we were looking for material for that recording, and I said this could be a really great song right here. They said, okay, let's listen to it. Well, they listened to it and they were like, really? You know, what are you thinking, man? I said get up and B chord and I'll show you. You know, I said, this is what we need to do. And there was a little bit of skepticism from a couple of them that this could be a good song for us. But nevertheless, they tried it with me anyhow. And when we got through, they were looking at me like, well, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying here. And then everybody just kind of started arranging within the song itself. Okay, who kicks it off? I said, you know, banjo. It's got to be a banjo kickoff. You know, and turn it just a half
mm-hmm.
for the kickoff, and then we'll go right into the vocal. You know, they kind of looked at each other. Okay, this sounds good here. It sounds like time for the the fiddle break or the mandolin break comes in here, and let's try it that way. Who's doing backup? Well, you know, it'd be good for you to do it right here because I just did it here. So, you know, that's kind of normal for any band at that point. But being, I guess, being able to hear the song, hear the demo on it with Bradley singing. See, Bradley lives in Alabama, and at the time, one of the writers lived in Alabama. The main writer of the song lived in Alabama as well. So I think they even may have been in the same band for a while. So that's how Bradley came to sing the demo on there. But being able to listen through it, and then I guess the thumbprint would be just put in a different chord. Not that we always do that, but sometimes, you know, it works.
Well, so what you're saying is you have to have a band. You have to have a band. If you're going to have a band and not just some guys who show up on stage, if you're going to represent yourself as a band, like Third Time Out, you have to have the members of that band have to feel free enough to make contributions to song selection and arrangements. Right. They have to feel not that they always get their way, but I'm saying they all have to be able to say, well, I think it should be this or that. And because you never know where that right decision is going to come from. You have to trust your band members and they have to trust everybody else that they're allowed to speak.
That's why they call it a band.
That's right.
So we all work together at the creation of our music. I guess there are some instances where one person dictates everything that goes on. But, you know, I mean, I don't know that that's the correct way to go about it or you're not. I think that you would probably miss out on some really good ideas from somebody else. And it could even get, I almost don't want to say this because I don't want to offend anybody, and I'm not trying to, but it could almost get stagnant, with the arrangements and things like that. You know, it's like, okay, well, I know where this is going because I've heard the arrangements so many times and I know this is what's fixing to happen. Right. And sure enough, that's what happens.
That's right. And it's easy.
And sometimes it's nice to just throw a curveball at them.
You know, the other way you were describing before you talked about the curveball, it's an easy, comfortable, almost too comfortable way to get into a recognizable groove where you just kind of, and at some point, I think you're going through the motions without that curve that you just mentioned. If everything is going to be lined up the same way and done the same way, it's a good sound, but at some point you're going to lose that little spark of creativity that makes the thing like John and Mary. I mention that because we talked about that because we came on the air, but I mean, it's still stuck in my mind. There's so many songs you've done that are like that, but you know what I mean? That's where you have to have that edge. You have to have a little bit of tension, not to where you want to knock each other out, although you could do that if you want to, but you have to have a little bit of tension in the band. You have to have a little tension in the band so that when you resolve those tension about disagreements on ideas, that's the product that you would not have gotten alone.
Yeah. No, it's very important for us to be able to communicate with each other and throw ideas around.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's, not just musically, but at some point somebody's got to say yay or nay.
Right.
And you got to have that as well. But
well, sure.
I really enjoy the collaboration that we've always had in this group. You know, music, that demos and things, I get a lot of stuff to review and bring forth to the group. But it comes from everybody in the group. They're all welcome to bring stuff in and ideas in, even if it's a song from a different genre that we want to try to do a cover on somehow. You know, it's great, bring in your ideas because, this is the thing that I always have thought that we brought. We haven't said it's got to be exactly like the recording. I mean, it was, if it's a kickoff, like John and Mary, Race the Miles. Those will always be the same, but there might be a little variance between one banjo player and the next, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Through the years. And they might kick off Hard Rock Night in Prison with just a couple of different notes, pretty much the same, but maybe just their own style,
right,
or their own interpretation of that kickoff. And that's what we've always seemed to have done. You bring your strengths to the band. We work with those. We don't try to mold you into being somebody you're not, because then you're going to get uncomfortable. So I want you to come in here, and if you weren't good enough to take the position, you wouldn't be here. You know, so bring your own identity, your own character into the group which you're playing, and that's kind of the way I feel like we've always been. You know, when Doyle Lawson kicks off Julianne, you know mm-hmm. what that song is.
Oh yeah,
and there's no mistake about it.
Right,
and that's a good point to be made right there. Mm-hmm. You know what the song is.
It's exactly.
Recognizable kickoff.
As a band, this third time out. Now I've seen you do live. Only you. I mean, I don't know how many times before you ever put it on record. So here's my question to you. As a band, as you're doing these things live, do you work through material live before you get to the studio, or do you just kind of figure on what you're going to do in the studio and then put it down and then tour behind it? You know what I mean?
Both cases are true. We've done both. We've
okay.
worked on material. In fact, I've got I keep going back to that one song, but it just happens to be the one. I was looking through some emails earlier this morning, and I had one from Ray Edwards, and it was an MP3 of us performing Hard Rock Mountain Prison Till I Die over in Alabama at a festival before we ever recorded the song. So what I'm saying, we've done that, and we've also gone into the studio and kind of scratched our head. You know, we got this many songs, so we need a couple more. What are they going to be? Let's put our heads together here and we actually come up with something, record them before we've ever performed them, you know, on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, both cases would be correct as far as that goes.
Well, then that's a good transition. Now let's talk about Timeless Hits from the Past, Bluegrass, which, by the way, congratulations. I think when the final tally was done in the rating for Billboard, it was number five in the Bluegrass?
Yeah, came out at number five, which we're very excited about. But, it was wonderful to read that news there. We had no idea how well it really ranked or where it stood in the whole scheme of things with Billboard's Bluegrass.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of a different project. I mean, you do have Only You, which is that kind of that doo-wop, in my mind, I would call it that old doo-wop
mm-hmm.
song, and then and you do have some. You've got Gentle on My Mind. You've got that was kind of a departure from. You mentioned you were influenced by country singers. There's a lot of country influenced songs on here, and then some diehard bluegrass. And you kind of mix it up, but as mm-hmm. a project, this is on the Cracker Barrel release. Timeless Hits from the Past, Bluegrass. It was a little different for you. So I would imagine coming out number five on that Billboard end of the year thing is pretty respectable for you.
Well, yeah. I hope that's what it kind of relates to everybody in the business, the fans included. But
yeah.
It was, I think, a testament to not only the strength of the songs and the project itself, you know, but media getting a hold of it, spreading the word, the association with Cracker Barrel Old Country Store was, you know what, there's a lot of people going to those places to eat every day. And that was great exposure for us, exposure that we wouldn't have had.
Well,
if it hadn't been for them.
Not only on the, of course, there's a website for Russell Moore and Third Time Out, which everybody can Google and find that. We don't need to dwell on that too much, but it's out there. But also, as far as what they used to call shelf space, where do you go anywhere and see on a shelf a physical product that's a bluegrass recording? You can't. So, but in Cracker Barrel gets behind a project like this, every one of those Cracker Barrels, which seem to be always a waiting line to me, you've got a space in there with this album on the Cracker Barrel label. That's a great thing.
Yeah. Like I said, we're very excited about it, and in the top five, they've got two even the. A project that came out after ours, Stephen Curtis Chapman,
mm-hmm.
was also ranked in the top five mm-hmm. there. So, good representation for them at the store, Cracker Barrel stores, and for their efforts, and great for us, you know, to be grouped in with all these other artists that you know, you might not see every day, and you know, or every weekend at a bluegrass festival.
Right.
You know, just being put in that that category with those people, hopefully will give us a little more exposure still.
Sure.
You know,
well,
people,
I think so.
In those other, in other musics, maybe they'll take notice of it and say, "Well, let's check this out."
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm kind of a, I'm just an old kind of guy. I like to, I have it in my hand right now. I like to have the physical CD. I can download things, and I do sometimes into the program if I need to, but I want to be able to find this physical thing and touch it and hold it and look at it and look at the pictures and read the credits, and then I'll take it away. But I'm so glad you have a place, because, man, I look all the time, and other than concerts, which is great. Folks who listen to this program know, if you go see Russell Moore the third time out, you know, buy CDs when you're there and buy product, because that helps the band immensely. That's a great point for you to make some sales. But it's nice to go to a place. I went, as soon as it came out, I went to Cracker Barrel and, you know, dug out my copy and whatever. But I mean, it's great. I want to have it in my hand. I want to have the thing in my hand. I don't want to just have MP3s are great. I'm not knocking it, yeah. But I'm just old enough that I still want to have the physical thing. So I'm glad you can find a place to grab hold of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are, you know, it's a little bit different format on the case or the,
mm-hmm.
You know, used to, you had the plastic cases that had the inserts, you know, you'd pull out and it had several pages, you know,
right.
That you could read through and pictures, you know, but I miss
vinyl.
Looking at album covers.
Oh, God.
You know?
How many times did you go to a record store and spend, maybe not have a dollar to spend, but you might spend an hour reading liner notes?
Absolutely. You know, it was great to hold them in your hand, and it's huge, you know, and you could, and it wasn't hard to read the print.
No. That's another thing, as we get older, Russell, it gets harder to see those little words, but you could read, you could find out who played with who back in whatever just by reading backs of albums. I miss that. I really do. It's not coming back. I know that vinyl's coming back as a bit of a niche thing, and it's cool to have it, but, you know, the reality is the way it is, but I'm still happy to have this physical product. Talk about a little bit of the recent changes in the band that I want to get into, what's coming up for Russell Moore in Third Time Out.
Well, at the end of last year, I guess most people know, but for those who don't, Steve Dilling, longtime member on the banjo, I guess about 20 years worth, decided to get off the road and not to travel so much. He's actually got a day job, I guess you'd say. He's got the 9-to-5 thing going on Monday through Friday, and still picking with a group that he and some other guys have put together. They're not really looking to go hardcore full time, you know, traveling like we do here.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still got his fingers in there, you know, no pun intended, playing banjo and doing some stuff. But, you know, his health, he cited, you know, health reasons, which we've all known that he had trouble with diabetes.
Really, yeah.
And then also diverticulitis. And then as of recently, the last few years, the focal dystonia in his right hand, which, you know, all these things, when you're out on the road, they're not the easiest things to, you know, keep track of, contain, or keep in good shape, especially the focal dystonia. There's really nothing.
There's no cure for it.
Not a cure. He was taking Botox treatments, to be honest with you.
I've talked to Tom Adams about that at length, and Tom is always, you know, following some new. And actually, he's playing a little bit of banjo, I heard recently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Tom, we've talked about that at length. So yeah, it's and if you're using your right hand, folks, what we're talking about is it's not a muscle disease per se. Really, the only way I can describe it, the signal isn't really getting through.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but somehow or another, the Botox is, you know, supposed to help.
Good.
And it did help him several times. It seemed like it wasn't working as long in between shots as he was going through the process of it, which was concerning, you know, that you're throwing this stuff in your body all the time.
Right.
There's been some, I guess, some discussion that it's really not good to have that much injected in your body. So, I, you know, anyway, it, you know, between that, the diverticulitis was getting worse, and we could tell that having stomach problems.
Oh yeah, sure. And traveling, like you say, traveling on the road with a working band, those are hard things to deal with.
They really are. So the opportunity came up for him to be able to support his family and stay close to home and still be involved with the music a little bit, and just no way that, you know, going out here on the road with us every weekend, like, you know, week after weekend and week out, was just becoming really heady for him to deal with. So, you know, Lord knows he loves all the people, the fans and the friends that he's made over the years. You know, but I support him in his decision.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if you don't have your health, you ain't got nothing.
You're right.
You know, and then, so anyway, he, at the end of the year, he left, and also Edgar Loudermilk, the bass player, has he's decided to team up with a fellow from the state of Kentucky, Dave Atkins.
Dave Atkins.
Yeah, and they've got a group together. I think they've got a four-piece group now, and they're booking shows for this year and further on. And again, it was just for Edgar, it was as he said, a hard decision to really come to, because he really enjoyed his time here and loved every one of us, as we did him. But he has really been doing a lot of writing in the last few years, and he and Dave got together and started doing some writing together. You know, and he was really wanting to get his music out there, his songs, mm-hmm. the ones that he wrote. He's recorded a couple of solo projects, which he's had on, you know, on the record table for sale whenever they come out, trying to promote his songs. But he was, I think, needing just a little more. And, you know, being, I mean, I commend him for his efforts and all that, and I understand why he felt like he needed to go to a different.
Well, it was just time. It was just time, Russell. It was time.
It was time. You know, it was time. There you go. So you know, I wish him luck, and we're still friends. Me and Edgar have been playing phone tag. He called me, I called him, and he called back, left another message, and I just called him. Earlier today, actually, and left another message for him. So we'll finally get it together. But anyway, we got two new members, and, man, they're doing just a great job. First guy on bass is Blake Johnson. He's from Roxboro, North Carolina. Last couple years, I guess, people might have seen him with Grasstown, with Alan Bobby and his group, Grasstown. He was playing guitar and singing lead. But I think he actually grew up playing upright bass more, which he's very comfortable with, and singing since he was a little kid. Blake's got a great voice and does a wonderful job singing harmony with me, even doing some lead stuff, too, in the shows. Really tickled to have him in the group. And also on banjo, a guy that's no stranger to bluegrass whatsoever, but might not be quite as noticeable in the last couple of years. He was actually not on stage. He was actually running sound for the Lonesome River Band. His name is Keith McKinnon. He's a great engineer, great sound man. But he's just as good a banjo player and has been playing for years. He and his brother Kevin actually had a group, I think, that they had put together and were playing some when they could, mm-hmm. when they weren't both going out doing other things for Lonesome River Band or I think Doyle, Kevin is with Doyle Lawson. So, you know, he got in touch with us and said he'd like to audition. And, you know, and Sammy was just great about everything. When I offered him the job, when I offered Keith the job, he went ahead and told Sammy that weekend that they had a show, they were going out, and he told Sammy that weekend that he had been offered the job here. He said the first thing Sammy did was stand up and give him a big hug. He said, buddy, I support, you know, I'm there for you. You know, I think it's a great opportunity for you, and you need to go. And I talked to Sammy even this last weekend, and he came to the show that we had in just outside of Galax, Virginia. And, you know, I told him I really appreciated him giving his blessing, you know, to Keith, because, you know, it's hard to tell somebody that you're going to be leaving the group after you've been there for years and your friends and things like that. So it's hard sometimes to get to that point and actually say it, and you're afraid that, oh, man, somebody's going to be upset with me or whatever. But he was really gracious like Keith said, he stood right up and gave me a hug and said, you know, I support you 100%. You know, he said, I always knew you were going to be playing banjo for somebody one of these days. He said, I just didn't know exactly when it was.
Well, that's so good. So you've reloaded and you're retooled, and you're hitting on all cylinders again.
We are. We've had several days of rehearsal. In fact, we got another one coming up this week before we head out to. Okay. To our shows, actually, one got let's see, where's it, Friday in Grayson.
Yeah, down the road from me.
Yeah, and at the VFW, and then we'll be in Clay City on Saturday for a matinee performance and an evening performance.
Okay.
So we're starting out the year strong. February, we've got a lot of stuff going on, and the more time we can spend together, then, you know, the tighter this configuration will become. We're very excited about where it's at right now, and everything we've been able to accomplish up to this point as far as getting ready for the shows, learning, not really learning the material. They've done, Keith and Blake both have done a great job woodshedding in December, learning the material and arrangements and the keys and all, you know, the vocal lines and the lyrics, everything. So now we're just fine-tuning and moving as fast as we can to get the songs into the shows that people, you know, the ones they request the most, and
yeah,
things like that. There's a few that we haven't been able to get to yet, but those will be coming up soon.
Well, Russell, one thing people know, that when Russell Moore and Third Time Out hit the stage, it'll be a great show. I mean, you've got the new members. It gives you a little bit of a, maybe some infusion of different ideas. I want to say always new, but some different perspectives on things. But every time you hit the stage, and with this new configuration also, they're going to see a great show.
Well, I like to think that we have something to offer that people will enjoy. I really do. I believe that. Just give us a chance, and I'm sure we can win you over. If you're not familiar with us, I, you know, invite you to come out and see what it's all about. And of course, as our show last weekend proved, you know, our fans are steadfast. They're true blue. They we had a great show, great crowd at the Fairview Roofing Club. You know, so I know we've got the support of our
absolutely.
Fans and friends. And,
oh, absolutely.
We want to come out and see us this year.
Sure. All right. Well, listen, we'll be following you around. And folks, if you want to track Russell Moore and Third Time Out, of course, that's that website, easy enough to find, and all kinds of good information. That's where you can see about them, the Timeless Hits from the Past, Bluegrass, where it placed in the Billboard, and you can see where they're going and catch up on some good stuff. And it's just fun to follow you that way. And we'll be looking for you. I can't wait to see you again live with the new band members. I know it'll be top flight. Whenever.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well, Steve.
All right, man.
Thanks for having me on your program. Hey, I enjoyed it. Let's do it again.
We absolutely will. Thanks, man, for being available. Russell Moore, and Third Time Out, and this worked out well, and we'll talk again. Russell, I'll let you go.
Okay, take care, buddy.
Thanks, man. Thanks so much to Russell Moore of Russell Moore and Third Time Out. You heard the changes in the band. Trust me, it's going to be a fabulous band whenever you see him live. And you know Russell's attitude towards putting out the sound and that very distinctive sound that band has, and its quality always. So you're going to enjoy it when you find him.